Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens, at the heart of Irish homes for over 40 years. Cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Email todaycb at rte.ie.
A reminder that later on in the programme, Dr. Maura Finn will be with us, GP Dr. Maura Finn, and today she's talking about how your GP can help throughout pregnancy. So if you have any questions for Maura, 51551 is the number to text, or you can email the programme todaycb at rte.ie. Fallout continues today from the Israeli airstrike on the aid convoy in Gaza, which killed seven people working for the food aid charity World Central Kitchen. There's been widespread condemnation from world leaders, along with demands for explanation. US President Joe Biden has said Israel is not doing enough to protect aid workers and has called for a swift investigation. Now, the Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu said Israel deeply regrets the tragic incident and that the convoy was hit unintentionally. Well, to take a closer look at this, I'm joined on the line by Shawshank Joshi, who's defence editor with The Economist. And thank you, Shawshank, for joining us again on the programme.
Good morning.
So we see in our newspapers and our news coverage online today this really shocking image of one of those vehicles in the aid convoy. And the sources from the IDF have said that the strike was a result of lack of discipline on the part of commanders on the ground. It wasn't due to coordination problems between the army, the Israeli army, and the humanitarian organisation World Central Kitchen. So can you explain to us what might have happened here?
Yes, well, what's happened is that the chief of staff of the IDF, the Israel Defense Forces, Herzi Halevi, said initially the attack was, and I quote, a mistake that followed a misidentification at night during a war in a very complex condition. So what that meant was they hit what they wanted to hit, but what they hit was not what they thought it was. That is, it was an aid worker and they thought it was an armed Hamas combatant. That was the initial claim by the IDF chief of staff, which is why you see this extraordinarily precise strike on the vehicle. And from what we understand, it was successive vehicles that were hit very precisely as people fled from one to the other. So they knew exactly the vehicle they were hitting, but they thought they were hitting something else. But what we've later seen from Israeli army sources who were speaking to Haaretz, which is a sort of center-left-wing Israeli newspaper that's very well respected and has good sources in the military from everything I've read and understood, they say that the explanation was it wasn't really about coordination, that is a lack of coordination between headquarters and the field. It was that, quote, every commander sets the rules for himself. In other words, the claim is that the rules of engagement, whatever they are officially, are being decided, determined, and applied in a very individual, freewheeling manner by commanders on the ground. And so you get situations where even if perhaps you suspect a Hamas commander is in a vehicle or a Hamas fighter is in a vehicle, that the procedures and checks for verifying that or the approval needed from higher headquarters, that all of that's being thrown out the window. And the commanders are doing this themselves. And that, of course, will result in terrible, terrible incidents like this one.
And if that is the case, is that normal for the Israeli Defense Forces that you would have indiscipline, for want of a better word?
It's very difficult to say. I think it varies and armies change over time in wars like this. We've certainly seen cases in Gaza where there have been cases of individual units doing things that are at odds with Israeli policy. For example, putting up an Israeli flag on key Gaza buildings, interrogating detainees in particular ways. And also, we've seen sort of signs of triumphalism or inappropriate behavior in the homes of Gaza residents. Now, the IDF says, of course, that's not policy. The problem is when you have systematic incidents where the civilians die, whether or not the army is deliberately targeting those civilians can sometimes over time become less important than the question of whether rules of engagement are good enough and whether those rules of engagement are being applied robustly. And so you can have violations of international law on a very widespread basis, even if that's not policy, because of lax oversight and because of the lack of discipline. And I think that is a real concern.
Well, if you're an aid agency or if you're the person in an aid agency who has to decide whether you should operate inside Gaza, that information today is going to make it very easy for you to make your decision. You couldn't operate there under those conditions.
No, certainly not. And I think this is not the first time that aid convoys have been struck. And frankly, you know, the IDF will claim on most of these occasions that the convoy or a vehicle or a column had a Hamas presence in it. And first of all, even if that's true, that doesn't necessarily mean that it's lawful or necessary or prudent to go and attack the entire thing. And secondly, cases like this show that that belief is often mistaken, that maybe the intelligence is bad or maybe the commander is acting on their own authority without adequate verification. And I think the result is a profoundly unsafe environment for aid agencies, which is now contributing to a disastrous humanitarian situation on the ground. And I think it's deeply troubling that Israeli political leaders, instead of addressing that situation, have routinely, I'm afraid to say in recent months, denied that there is in fact a humanitarian catastrophe at all. And that is just completely unacceptable.
And so Benjamin Netanyahu is in an increasingly precarious situation politically here now, isn't he?
Well, he is. He's got his domestic political position has been increasingly strained for months. That's not new. His relationship with the United States has all but broken down with the US criticizing him publicly, although they, of course, have partially defended this particular incident, saying, you know, it wasn't intentional. And, it's clear that the American government is really worried he's going to go into Rafah, the southern city, and he's insisting he is, and the American government saying that's a red line. So there's a showdown coming. But that doesn't mean the politics in Israel is in place to push him out, you know, immediately. This is a very complex set of political arrangements. Opposition parties have to move in concert. Someone has to stand up and challenge him. And so I don't see any immediate pathway to the removal of Netanyahu from office right now. And I think it's really important to understand that even if Bibi goes, if Netanyahu goes, there is a war cabinet, including other opposition leaders like Benny Gantz, who broadly support this campaign, even if not every aspect of it. And this war does not go away with Netanyahu. I think that's a grave mistake to think it does.
Benny Gantz, though, seems to be more at one with the Americans. We remember recently he had that visit to Washington and Benjamin Netanyahu came out and said that it hadn't been sanctioned. Is Gantz somebody that the Americans would feel more comfortable with in power?
They would feel comfortable with virtually anyone other than Netanyahu, barring, of course, some of his most extreme far-right allies who are in government, people like Ben-Gvir, you know, who are extreme pro-settler, extreme Zionists. And the Americans would prefer almost anyone, however, but, you know, to Netanyahu. Benny Gantz would seem like a sort of dream partner in comparison. But I think it's just important to understand, just because he is more conciliatory and emollient than Netanyahu, and just because he might be willing to talk to the Americans in more respectful fashion, that does not mean he will necessarily draw this war to a close. It does not mean he will rule out an offensive in Gaza. And it does not mean he will somehow be able to transform the IDF. I mean, he is, of course, the man who led the IDF. He's a former chief of staff of the IDF. And surely that does also make him somewhat responsible for the rules, procedures and norms that prevail in the armed forces today.
Shawshank, thank you very much for joining us. That's Shawshank Joshi, who is defence editor with The Economist.
Text 51551 today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.